Welcome to the Lesbian Book Club with Claire Lydon. Please enjoy the podcast from My Lesbian Radio.
Hello and welcome to episode 36 of the Lesbian Book Club with me, your host, Claire Lydon. This month we have a frankly fabulous interview with UK author Wendy Hudson, and you'll hear that in a few moments' time. But before we get to that, we're going to see what's hot in the UK and US Amazon lesbian fiction charts, as well as filling you in on what I've been up to over the past month or so. And I have to say, if my voice is a bit croaky, I apologise. I do keep having to clear it this morning for some reason. I just thought I'd do like the professional that I am. I just thought I'd do some warm up exercises for my voice because it was so croaky this morning. I have no idea why. So I just got my guitar down from the wall and I was just singing a bit of Indigo Girls because, yes, I am that gay. Also, Alex Clare's Too Close. They're my two close to fine and too close. I like the word close in my go-to songs that I know the chords for. But I've got to say, even my singing, I sounded like I've taken up a 20-a-day habit. And believe me, I tried to smoke when I was 16 and it didn't really work out very well, which I'm very pleased about now. At the time, it was deeply uncool. But anyway, so that's my voice. Hopefully it will last out for this podcast. Anyway, let's get to the Amazon lesbian fiction charts. So this month in the charts, what I've noticed is there are a whole lot of Danes. Now, not Dane Bowers, which is, you know, for those of us in the UK, sad. Not Sandy Toksvig, although you know, that's not a bad idea, actually. Sandy, if you're listening, which I'm sure she is in between recording Bake Off, the Lesfic Charts needs you to write a lesbian fiction novel, romance or a crime, whichever genre you like, or maybe a shape-shifting fantasy. Maybe she could co-write it with Noel Fielding. Now there's a there's something to think about. That book would be like zany. But back to Danes. Not great Danes, although perhaps they are too much beloved to their loved ones. But no, burning up the lesbian fiction charts in both the US and the UK, as I record this, are Nicolette Dane with her new book Float Her Boat, as well as Cynthia Dane with her erotic romance Kiss and Tell. Now, Cynthia Dane is the co-author alongside Hildred Billings, who's not a Dane, but what a great name nonetheless. And when I checked out Cynthia and Hildred, they have apparently authored approximately a million books in the last year. So I reckon you should be in safe hands with those two. So in Kiss and Tell, the story goes thusly. We meet heiress Victoria, who's about to go on a book tour featuring her lesbian self-help book. And she's taking along her girlfriend to demonstrate what a brilliant relationship she's got. But then the fly in the ointment is that her girlfriend leaves her for another woman. Don't awkward for a relationship guru. So Victoria's publicist hires Madison from an escort agency to pose as her girlfriend. And thus the two women are thrown together on a bus, I imagine. A really posh bus, probably, for 2 weeks. Madison has never been with a woman before. I reckon after 2 weeks on that bus, this might be about to change. I don't actually know if they go on a bus. I just assume they do, because that's what you do on a tour, right? You know, like a tour bus, not like a double decker. That'd be a bit rubbish. Anyway, this one has really glowing reviews, actually. And if you like books set in the world of the rich and famous, grab this one for your collection. And now on to the other Dane, which is Nicolette Dane and her new book, Floats Her Boat, which is currently number one in the US and the UK. Now, the cover depicts a woman on a jetty who frankly couldn't look less likely to get in a boat, instead looking like she just stepped off the set of the latest Jane Austen adaptation. So perhaps the title is a play on words and not actually anything about boats. I don't know. This book is about Brooke, who goes up to her family cabin to clear it out after her mother's death. And she's not looking forward to it, and she's intending to clear it out and sell it on and make a quick buck. But then she meets her neighbour, singer Haley, and the pair hit it off. So will Brooke go through with the planned sale of the cabin, or will she stick around to float into the sunset? Do you see what I did there? You know the romance rules by now, right? So I reckon there could be a bit of floating and bumping going on around that cabin. So that's it for Dane news. In non-Dane news, one of my favourite Lesthick? I'm having trouble with my words today. My voice is holding out, but Lesthick. That could be a new genre, right? Anyway, one of my favourite Lesfic authors is G. Benson. She has a new book out, and it's called Who'd Have Thought? It's top five in the UK and stateside, and this one has the theme of a marriage of convenience. Top neurosurgeon Samantha needs a marriage of convenience, and she's prepared to pay broke ER nurse Hayden a ton of money if she looks pretty and pretends to be madly in love with her for a whole calendar year. Now, Samantha is naturally an ice queen, so enter Ice Queen Thora Hayden. I haven't read this yet, I do plan to, but if it's anything like all the other stuff G. Benson has written, then ladies, we have a winner. Put it on your Christmas list now, and it's going down a storm in the charts right now. Finally, it's not a Dane. If it's not a Dane, it's a Kane bothering the charts in the US and the UK. This time, Diana Kane, who's got two hits in the top five in both charts, Fusion and Providence, both in her Velvet series. Tipping the Velvet, I assume, but, you know, who knows? The first book, Fusion, deals with Alexis getting over a bombshell. I'm not sure if the bombshell is metaphorical or literal. The blurb is vague. And Alexis has a chance meeting with neurosurgeon Catherine. Now, neurosurgeons are clearly in vogue, y'all. So if there's any writers listening, quick write in a neurosurgeon, although they'll probably be out of vogue by the time it comes out. But it depends how quick you write. Back to the book. Alexis can't get Catherine, the neurosurgeon, out of her head. And we all know that's not good when nothing can happen. Or can it? Providence, meanwhile, Diana Kane... Kane's other book has workaholic Dr. Sarah Hudson, who's all work and no play, which makes Sarah a dull girl until she meets someone who changes it all. Diana then tells us the book contains sex and strong language, which is all the recommendation I need, frankly. See for yourself, as I haven't read either of these either. I've been too busy trying to launch a book, everyone. I haven't been reading. Although, no, I say that and I'm lying slightly. I have been reading, but I haven't been reading lesbian fiction. Shock horror. I've actually just finished last week The Memory Book by Rowan Coleman, and it was absolutely fantastic. It's a great fiction book. It's about a woman who gets early onset dementia and how she and her family deal with it. It sounds a bit sad and it is quite emotional, but it's also very funny and very poignant and just very touching. So yeah, go and read that too. So that's the chart roundup for, October, the end of October, or nearly November. As is traditional, we're onto the Christmas countdown. Only 7 weeks to go, everyone. Hooray! I love Christmas. I love everything about it. But most of all, I love it when Halloween is out of the way, and then we can really concentrate on Christmas, because I'm not a big fan of Halloween, whatevs. It's not a big thing in the UK, although it's starting to be a bit more of a big thing. But let's get Halloween out of the way, and then let's get the fakes now out and start watching Christmas movies, I say. So what else has been going on in the past month since we last had a podcast? Well, let's look at my personal news. What have I been up to? Quite a lot, actually. First up, I've just published my brand new novel, Twice in a Lifetime. Hurrah! Now, this one is a second chance romance, and I have to say, I fucking love it. I'm not sure if you meant to say that about your own books, but I do. I just really love this story. It's a story of Harriet and Sally, two teenage lovers who lost touch, and they went to different colleges, but then they meet up again by chance, and sparks fly. Can they get over their past to claim their future, or will it be a case of once bitten, twice shy? I think you know the romance rules, right? I hope you read this one, though, as I really love it. And it was also a huge challenge for me, probably the most difficult book I've ever written, but not because of the story or because I didn't just fall in love with the story and it flowed, it did. But it's because I chose to set it in Chicago, and I decided I wanted to do this quite early on because I went to Chicago this year and I fell in love with the city and I decided to set a book there. And I decided I wanted both my protagonists to be Americans, so I decided to make them talk like Americans. But then I thought, do I need to change the spellings as well? And I decided that yes, because if an American picked up this book and the characters were American, talking American, but spelling in English, that would be very odd. So I went all in. And believe me, this is not easy for someone who's very, very British. but you know what? Beyond all that, I love the romance in the book. And I think the story suited being in America because that's how I birthed it, I suppose. And it's probably because I had that idea in Chicago, I felt it should stay there. And I have had my early readers, some early readers, ask me whether or not is this is something I'd do again. As I know, I am the British, you know, one, I'm not, I am. I am one of a set of authors who's known for doing British lesbian fiction. And the answer is, not for quite a long time, I wouldn't do this again. Because changing the language, nuances and spelling is hard work. And frankly, I'm naturally a lazy person by trade. But despite the fact that I've spelled all my colours without a U and I'm saying mom instead of mum, I hope you enjoy the book. It's a story with heart, romance and a whole heap of love. And if you want to warm the cockles of your heart, cockles warmed, is the book for you. And I'll be reading from it at the upcoming Diva Literature Festival, which is taking place in Birmingham on November the 3rd to the 5th. I'm speaking on two panels on Sunday the 5th, one on self-publishing and the other on lesbian romance. So if you'd like to come along, you can get your tickets at the Diva Literature Festival website. Just put it into Google and it will come up. I'm also still up for the award of Best Romance for my book Nothing to Lose. So if you'd like to vote for me, head on over to the Diva Literature Festival website and they've got a voting button at the top. Click that button and click Nothing to Lose. All votes gratefully received. As well as my new book release, in other personal book news, I can reveal that I have just signed an audiobook contract with Audible Studios for the first three London romance books, along with the fourth one, which I'm writing right now, currently titleless. Well, the working title is London 4. So I need to come up with something more catchy than that, don't I? But I'm really thrilled to be working with Audible on this, because it means if you're an audiobook fan, which I am, and I hope you are because you're listening to a podcast, it means that my audiobooks will be out sooner rather than later. They should all be out by the early part of next year. And it's going to be great to get all three London books out in audio. So huzzah for that. Hooray. So lots of exciting things happening. The world of lesfic is quite quiet at the moment. So I can't think of any specific things happening apart from the Diva Literature Festival. So if you're in the UK and if you're free on November the 3rd to the 5th, do come along. It'd be great to see you and come and say hi. Now it's time for the interview with the lovely Wendy Hudson. I hope you enjoy. So joining me today is UK author Wendy Hudson, whose debut novel, Four Steps, won a Goldie for Best Debut Novel last year, and she's just released her second book, Mind to Keep. Wendy has been nominated for Best Crime Novel in the upcoming Diva Litfest Awards for Four Steps, so she's had a pretty stellar launch into the lesfic sphere. She lives in Glasgow with her partner, so welcome, Wendy.
Hi.
How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How's it going?
It's going well here in London. I know you're up in Glasgow, so what have you been up to today?
I've been at work today, doing the day job. It's World Mental Health Day today, so I've been at one of our hospitals doing an awareness kind of session on that for NHS staff.
Oh, cool. Cool.
That was my exciting day.
Yeah, that does sound quite exciting, actually.
It is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And World Mental Health Day, a very good thing to be highlighting. I just heard James Arthur on the radio today talking about his mental health. Do you remember James Arthur, who won the X Factor?
Yeah, that X Factor guy. Yeah, I do remember him.
Yeah, and he was on the radio today talking about it because he's had a lot of mental health issues in his past, which affected his behaviour. So that was quite interesting. Anyway, that's a diversion. Yeah. Let's not talk about James Arthur.
There'll be plenty, I'm sure there'll be
plenty. So paint a picture of where you're speaking to us today from, Wendy. What can you see?
What can I see?
Yeah.
My desk is kind of like shoved into a little corner of one of our spare rooms. So I can see an Alice in Wonderland picture with one of my favourite quotes on it. And a very nice picture of my family, all my siblings.
Oh, it's nice. It's nice. Yeah. Very nice.
It's raining outside.
And it's of course it's raining. Yeah. So tell me a bit about your writing journey and how you got started.
Well, I've always been a reader, like from a really young age. I put this in my biography actually because I have 5 younger siblings. Mm-hmm. So I used to build little dens and things to go and hide. I used to hide in the attic and everything, reading.
Right. Yeah.
And I guess I just kind of daydreamed about if I wrote my own book, like what story would I write, and what would be my favourite genre to write in, because I used to read all sorts. And then I had that thing that I think a lot of us have when I turned 30 and I panicked. And I thought my life was over.
Oh, yeah, at 30, yeah. No, I think you've got a few more years yet. You're all right.
And so I decided I was going to draw up this like list of 5 things that I'd always wanted to do or learn to do, and writing a book was on that list.
Oh, wow.
So, and I also had, I learned to sail, I learned how to ski, I also finally learned how to drive. So yeah, I think I'm doing them all now to a kind of relatively competent level.
Yeah.
I'm 35 now, so I've had a bit of practice.
That's pretty cool, though. You've done quite a lot in 5 years. And are you sort of a good skier now, good sailor, a good driver, would you say?
Well, the last time I sailed, I capsized. but I've never crashed my car, touch wood. And I've never broke a bone skiing, so I'm saying yes to all of them.
Okay. Well, you're a very good writer. I can vouch for that one. So if you're doing all those to the same standard, it's going to be brilliant. And have you got any other ones to tick off yet from that bucket, from that list?
No, I've done them all.
Oh, well done. You need new challenges in your life.
I know. Maybe once I hit 40, I'll do another list or something.
Yeah.
I think I'm kept busy enough just now.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So so that's really, really great. So how long was it after your 30th birthday that you published 4 Steps? How long ago was that now?
Well, that was just August last year. I'll be honest, I didn't really take it very seriously, the whole writing a book thing. I mean, I used to sit on my sofa on a Saturday afternoon with my friend Sarah, who worked for like the BBC and stuff, doing creative like adverts and things, and so she would be at one end of the sofa and I'd be at the other end, and we'd be eating like Haribo and junk food, and she'd be editing little videos and I'd just be tapping away kind of writing this story. And then about 3 years later I suddenly had a finished manuscript. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of sat on my computer for a while.
As these things tend to do.
Yeah. I never actually thought about sending it away anywhere.
But then you did eventually send it to Ilva, and did they say yes straight away?
Yeah, they did. I was quite shocked. I sort of researched a lot of different publishers and I considered doing it myself. And then I picked Ilva. I'd heard really good things about them. And yeah, they replied within about a week, just one little line saying we loved your manuscript and we'd like to publish it. So
awesome.
I think I was sat at my desk at work actually, and I did a few little spins on my chair at work, and everyone around me was like, what's Wendy doing, like, what's happening right now? And because they didn't know I'd written a book, never mind sent it away, so.
So did you tell them at that point?
Yes, yeah. They were all very delighted.
Yeah. So how would you describe one of your books to someone who's never read one?
Oh, that's always such a tough question. Do you not find when someone says, well, what's your books about? You, like, all of a sudden you can't remember a single thing about it.
Oh, yeah, that's standard, yeah.
I actually saw this term on the Lesbian Review website the other day, and it was big sky romance, and I would say mine would be like big sky romantic suspense books. So like the landscape definitely plays a major part of the book, because they're set in Scotland, it's so beautiful, so I'd say they're kind of like romantic suspense with mountains, murders, locks and love, basically.
I think that's the perfect description. Look at that. Even got some alliteration in there. Well done.
I love a bit of alliteration.
Yeah. And big sky romance. Was that relating to the landscape, or was that just like a broad scope landscape?
Yeah, no, I think relating romance-y. To the landscape. I think it's those kind of outdoor novels, you know, where there's you're in forests or mountains or you know, by the sea or whatnot. I think where it plays a major part of the actual book.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about the setting, because you said that the setting is a key part, and it was in For Mind to Keep, which I read for this for this interview. It's very Scottish. That's all I can say. It's set mainly in an old castle and rolling countryside, old castle that's now a hotel. So
yeah,
tell me a bit about sort of how important in your storytelling setting is, because I know Four Steps was set in Scotland too, right?
I think, like, well, maybe if I tell you the story of how I was inspired to write Four Steps, that might give you a little idea.
Go on then.
It's kind of a funny story. Well, I was basically sat like a couple of hundred meters from the top of a Scottish mountain, and I was completely soaked, and the sole of my boot had cracked. So, and it was really boggy, so it was letting in water and my feet were freezing. So I was just basically, I was starving, I was cold, I was knackered and just generally miserable. And I could like see in the distance this little bothy that I would be sleeping in that night. And it was like this little brown dot in the distance. And it just seemed so far away, I wanted to cry. But instead I just kind of sat and I ate a bar of chocolate and I took some pictures, and it was this like really beautiful waterfall near where I was sat. And then, I'm not even kidding you, the sun came out and this big rainbow appeared like over the valley. and I was just like, it was like it was meant to come out and make me feel better, basically. And then I did spend a very cold and creepy night in the bothy, but I had some company and there was whiskey and there was some hot mush for dinner. And so that basically inspired the whole start, like the first few chapters of Four Steps. That's where the two main characters meet in the countryside. They share a bothy together. You know, they're there climbing mountains.
What's a bothy, by the way?
Oh, bothy.
You've mentioned this three times now, and I'm like, I still don't know what it is.
Sorry, a bothy is like, it's like a free shelter for the night.
Okay.
So all through the Scottish mountains, it could be like a little cave. It could be like a little shepherd's hut, or just something that has a roof on it, basically.
Okay.
And they're free to stay in, and it's just first come, first served. So
right.
You get there and you chuck down your sleeping bag, and there might be two people, there might be 10 people.
Okay.
And you never know who you're going to end up sharing with either. And so this bothy was a tiny little shed just set into the side of the hill with a bunk bed for two in it, basically.
Right. Okay. Wow. It sounds like not my kind of thing at all. I'm more your hotel kind of gal. But so Scotland is very much the setting for both your novels. Do you think you'll leave Scotland for any future stories?
Well, the third third one I'm now writing is also based in Scotland as well. It's in and around Inverness and Loch Ness, and which is another area of Scotland I love. I mean, I've lived here for like 8 years now, I think, and I'm just a complete tourist. Like, I've probably seen more of Scotland than most of my Scottish friends, I think. But there is one idea I do kind of have for the future that involves some of the characters travelling. So I think I might be forced away from Scotland in the future, but I think I'll still always use places that I've lived or travelled myself.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
For inspiration, I think you can just write it so much truer. And yeah, so maybe in the future, but for now, I'm enjoying myself in Scotland. So
yeah. Cool. So let's talk about Mind to Keep, which I read, which I was a little bit scared about reading because the cover is pretty creepy. It shows the stairs down to from a creepy looking brown door down to a cellar. But hooray for me, the book was not nearly as scary as the cover sort of says it is. So that was good because I'm not very good with scary stories. It has got it has got tension and it has got suspense, but it wasn't. I could take it, so that's good. So yeah, and it's a really really cool story. It's a great crime thriller, but it's got a romance at its heart as well, which is great. So you do a great job of working up the suspense in the book, because we know from the beginning that her dad is a wrong'un. I think that's Erin's dad, isn't it? So how do you do that? How do you keep the tips and tricks? Have you got any tips and tricks for keeping the suspense going? Because you're pretty good at it.
Oh, thanks. With Mind to Keep, it was quite difficult because with Four Steps, the suspense story and the romance story were very much kind of separate until they kind of came to a conclusion together towards the end. Whereas with Mind to Keep, they were much more intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was something that I thought a lot about, right even into the content editing stages, because there was potentially kind of two versions that I could have gone with. And one, I could have taken the prologue out and amended some other parts, and that would have meant like the reader would be guessing much longer regarding the dad and his creepiness levels. I don't want to give too much away here. Or I could leave it in so that the reader figures things out a bit sooner.
Mm-hmm.
But with the hope that I have that Erin's character is done well enough that like readers will relate to her and believe in her and generally only want good things to happen. So that when she's finding out all the terrible creepy stuff, you already know it's coming. And so you kind of empathize with the character and you're sort of fearful for her.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like transferring that fear onto the reader. So, you know, you don't want to turn the page because you see what's coming, but she doesn't. So I think that's maybe like your two options when it comes to suspense or mystery. And so I guess I took a gamble on readers loving Erin and investing in her. And, you know, I wanted them to shout that line, "Oh, don't go down there," rather than, "Oh, I wonder what's down there."
Yeah.
So for me, the first is more emotional as a reader and it gets more of a reaction. And I guess so it's just giving those little nuggets away as you go through and not just spewing it all out in one go. And then if you can get your reader to invest in your character, I think that helps with the suspense as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about characters, I think you did a great job with the two leads, Erin and Abigail. I found their story and their attraction very believable. And the day after I finished the book, I found I was missing the characters. I was thinking, oh, you know, there's a hole in my day, and it was your characters weren't there to keep me company. So what do you think makes a great character in a story?
That's actually one of my favourite things to hear from people, by the way, when people say, "I miss your characters." And I think because I miss them too.
Yeah.
Like, I still miss Laurie and Alex from Four Steps as well. I think about them occasionally. Yeah. Wonder what they're doing now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. What makes a great character? Like, who can really say? like, we talk about depth of characters all the time, I think, and that's obviously important for me. I think, like, you might notice I kind of rarely describe a character's looks or, like, what they're wearing. It's only very occasionally, but not often, because I like reader to, you know, get a little bit here and there and then just kind of create how the person looks in their mind, like, in their own mind. I think it kind of bugs me as a reader when, particularly with romance and stuff, you know, every look that passes between characters, the author feels a need to remind you that her eyes are the bluest blue you've ever seen. I'm like, yeah, I get it. She's got blue eyes.
But they're the colour of the ocean.
And yeah, of course, like, I will mention that maybe once or something. But what I want is more like the physical habits, like the mannerisms and, you know, the reactions people have when we talk about something, see something, hear something, feel something. So it's more like, I don't know, if you can pick up on those realistic, you know, the leg jiggling because you're nervous, simple things like that. So I find myself staring at people on buses and stuff quite a lot, like noting down all their little tics and things.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I always think that. I always think I should go to a coffee shop and just, you know, sort of watch people. But then I think, you know, people will think I'm a bit strange just sitting there. Yeah. But, you know, they probably never notice. I could just be pretending to be on Google or something, you know.
Oh, no, I am that creep in the coffee shop. I also think with characters that motivation is really important. And not just motivation, but them having a background that, like, supports that motivation. So whether it's the good guy or the bad guy, or good girl or bad girl, you know, I think you need to believe that their reactions are true to what you've been told about the character already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you know about certain things, their background, you're like, well, yeah, that person would react like that. Mm-hmm. Rather than, you know, this, like, drama just suddenly coming out of nowhere and then someone, like, throwing the toys out of the pram and you're like, that really wasn't a big deal. And then you find out, oh, it's because of such and such in the past. And you're like, well, that might have been helpful to know before. I don't know. I think all those things help a reader to feel like they know the character, and then, you know, that makes them great.
Yeah. As we said, Mind to Keep is, a lot of it is set in an old castle that's now a hotel. So was that based on anything in reality?
Yeah, it is. And not quite as dramatic a story as Four Steps, but in my day job I was doing some work in South Lanarkshire. I was working with a group of women in a care home. I won't go into what my day job is, but it meant, because it was like a 100-mile round trip to Glasgow, so I was kind of staying down there occasionally, and there's not many hotels, so I got put up in this castle hotel that was like four-poster beds and turrets and stained glass windows and things, and it was amazing. It was just kind of sat in the little lounge area of my room, looking out across the hills and the sheep, and there's like a river and stuff, and it was just really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then just through the work that I was doing down there, I got to know a lot of locals. The girl Laura, who works behind the bar in the Crown, like, she told me tons of different stories about the local area, and sort of gave me some inspiration. And then some of the care workers I was working with told me little tidbits of, like, history. And so just a nugget of an idea that I already had just kind of came to life, basically, going down there. So
I think it's a really, really strong sort of place to set your book, because you can really imagine it, really picture it. So that, yeah, it's really cool. It really comes over. And just going back to the Scottishness as well, it carries through to the dialogue as well. You've got no softening of that for anybody who doesn't say I instead of yes. And when I was reading it, I found myself reading it in a Scottish accent.
I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, I really did. Have you had a lot of comments on that?
I actually think I've gone really easy on you all as well, because I, you know, I'm not a Scottish native. I'm not from here originally, but you know, I have picked up a number of things, but I think I've been quite sparing with it.
Oh, wow!
I did want.
See, I was picking up on it all over, so there you go.
But then maybe I don't realise, I'm thinking I'm going easy on you, and actually I'm not. I mean, I definitely wanted to get the Scottish voice across, you know, and I'm lucky with my publisher that I get to write in English, you know, British English, and they didn't sort of change any of that kind of thing in the book for, you know, the American market. But then I think, you know, Americans love Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
Like, most are probably related to Scotland somehow.
Yeah.
So, I just thought readers would enjoy that. But I didn't want to... Also, I didn't want to trip readers up, though, and kind of, like, stall the flow of the story by having to look up, you know, constant words. So, you know, so the dialect isn't true Glaswegian or whatnot.
No.
It's a kind of generic version of Scottish.
Yeah, that, yeah. There's no mention of bothies, so.
No, there is.
Oh, there is.
I couldn't just call it a shed.
Yeah.
Like, or outdoor free shelter or something like.
I read. I heard the other day about there's a new feature on Kindle where you can give like a glossary and a backstory. So if people hover over a particular word and they don't know what it is, if you've put in the explanation, they can just click on it and it will come up. So so there you go. That's.
Yeah, I should go through and do that.
No, I don't think that.
I've got another book to write here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think you should go back and explain Scottish, explain all your books. No, I don't think it tripped up at all. And I actually enjoyed it. I enjoyed the sort of the difference in it. So that it made me smile.
And I just say as well, like, because I do think like the vast majority of our kind of lesbian stories are set in America. So I think I do get a lot of positive feedback because people enjoy something a bit different. And you probably find the same because, you know, you're the London author.
I am the London author, yeah.
I want to be the Scottish author. So.
Yeah, there you go. You're the Scottish author, I'm the London author. Although my next book is set in Chicago, so that's going to really confuse everybody. But, you know, I like to shake things up. So
that's going to be great.
I know. I'm even doing American spellings and everything because the character is American, so they've got to speak American and think American. So,
I'll forgive you for that then.
Yeah. Everyone's going to go, Claire, you spelt it all wrong. Yeah.
What have you said?
Yeah. And Four Steps, you just mentioned as well, but obviously that exploded into the lesbian world last year and it won a Goldie as well, which you must have been thrilled with. So tell me about the moment you learnt about that. I imagine you were asleep, but have you received the gong now?
I have. It's sitting proudly on my bookshelf. No, I wasn't asleep because Michelle Teichman, oh my God, she'll have a fit if I've said her name wrong. I'm kidding. She was at the Goldies and she travelled down from Toronto and she basically said, I hope you're staying up. And I was just between my day job and edits for mine to keep, and I was so knackered, but I just thought, okay, I'll stay up for it. And she promised that she was going to message me immediately, and it ended up being like 2 o'clock in the morning our time. I was a little bit excited, I'm not gonna lie. if I'd gone to bed, I probably wouldn't have slept. So I just kind of, I lay on the sofa, I was just reading, and I let my girlfriend go to bed, which she was very happy about. And then I just got this message all in like capital letters from Michelle saying, you won. But it was so quiet, like my street is really quiet, and my girlfriend's in bed sleeping. So I just did this little quiet, like half dance, half jiggle on the sofa myself, and then just laughed at myself. But then Michelle sent a video that she'd taken of them actually announcing it, And that was very surreal, and I was really gutted that I hadn't been able to go.
Do you think do you think you might make it to a GCLS conference one year?
Yeah, I mean, I'd really like to go to Vegas if I can. Vegas is a bit more accessible for me from Scotland. I can actually get reasonably priced direct flights there. Chicago was really difficult. It was like two or three flights.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah, because I was, I actually met Michelle just before she went there. Yeah, in Toronto. So, hi, Michelle. but yeah.
Upset me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But yeah, and I was in Chicago, but like 3 weeks before the conference, so yeah, bad timing. But I'd love to go to Vegas because I like Vegas, but next year's not, I'm not gonna be able to do it, so there you go. So tell me a little bit about your writing process, because obviously you said you've got a day job, so how do you fit it in around your day job, and is there a particular time that you write best?
How do I fit it in? I get asked this a lot, actually. I think I always just say, like, if you're really passionate about something and you enjoy doing it, you know, you'll find the time, and you'll sacrifice other things to do it as well, because actually that's the thing that you want to be doing, and you'll maybe, like, I don't know, sacrifice your Netflix account or something. But I just love doing it, so there's very few other things I'd rather be doing, so I find the time.
Okay.
And as for my process, I don't write anywhere apart from at the desk that I'm sitting at right now. Like, I'm not someone who can, like, pick up my laptop and go to a coffee shop or write on a train or anything like that. I kind of have my little bubble here and that's it. And so I tend to generally write at night after the day job, or, like, all weekend, basically. But I do find productivity is very dependent on my mood, so there isn't really an ideal time, to be honest. I'm definitely more of a night owl, though, so than a morning person.
Okay, cool.
I wish I was a morning person.
Yeah, me too. But you know, we can't be everything, can we? I think I am more productive generally in the evening. But
yeah.
And do you have any mantras when you sit down to write? Do you time yourself, or do you have any, like, sort of little things that you say?
Just one chapter. I just sit down and I'm like, just write one chapter, and then if anything more happens, I can be, like, really smug to myself because I've written more than one chapter.
No, that's a really good tip, actually, because I've heard a lot of people say that, and I should use that for myself, because at the moment, because I'm being quite resistant to writing. But just sit down and just say, do like 500 words, and then if you do any more, great.
Yeah, because I'm not really into word counts,
right?
I have to say,
right.
I mean, I can maybe tell you at any given time how many words I have on a manuscript, but I really don't obsess over it. I understand why other writers like doing that, but I just find I can sit and write like 5,000 words in a few hours and then delete a load of it because it's crap, and then spend like an entire day and only write 1,000 words, but then I'll be really happy with it. So I think if I'm always sitting like trying to aim for a word count, I just get really frustrated.
Okay, cool. And so what would you say is your favourite thing about writing, and what's your least favourite thing?
Thinking about this, I think my favourite thing is when you kind of write that line that, like, makes you mentally just, like, shout yes, because, like, to you it's bloody genius and everyone else should just go home.
That's a great answer. I like that. Have you written one of those recently?
No. I tell you what, these first 10,000 words of this new book are crap.
Oh yeah, but you can't edit a blank page, so you know.
Well, actually, that's one of my other sayings. Yeah. So, and my least favorite is probably like this, what I'm experiencing right now, because mine is all the sweating and panicking that you do, like, when your book is being released. It's just like newly released or just about to be released. Sleepless nights and worry and everyone's going to hate it and I hate it and yeah.
Well, you know,
why don't I do this to myself?
Yeah. that's normal, but I can tell you everyone's going to love it and everyone should rush out and buy it when it's released on well, it'll be out by the time this podcast is out, so you should definitely go and buy Mind to Keep. When is it out, actually? It's going to be out, isn't it, by the time this podcast is October?
Yeah, it's the 18th of October. You can get it on ebook on the Elva website,
mm-hmm.
Paperback on Amazon and other platforms, and then 2 weeks later it will be available on Kindle on Amazon.
Okay. So, and are you an avid reader of lesbian fiction as well?
I've definitely read my fair share. I tend to stick to the kind of crime, thriller, and mystery books, but I'm definitely a sucker for the occasional romance, and I have my kind of short list of go-to authors for that, which you are on, as you know.
Oh, I'm on.
I really like yourself and Tig Ashton, or Claire Ashton, sorry, and Jade Winters. I always like Jade Winters too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few in the kind of romance genre that I'll go for. But I'm always up for trying something new. You know, I like fiction, I like non-fiction as well. So I sort of flip between lesfic and other genres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very dependent, yeah.
So who's your favourite author in the crime mystery genre that you're in lesfic?
I'm in. Oh, I don't know.
You haven't got a favourite like crime author that you've you've read a lot of.
Can I give you two?
Yep.
Okay, so Ari Bradshaw.
Mm-hmm.
Her Rainy Bell series, I really, really enjoyed.
I've heard that a lot, actually. Yeah.
I enjoyed it. You know, just the characters and stuff and. And she knows I'm a massive fan of hers as well. I'm a bit of a fangirl. I love all her books, but and I have to say, because she's my editor as well, Andrea Bramall.
Mm-hmm.
She writes such diverse. If you look across all the books she's written, they're so diverse. But her crime series, the most recent ones, Kaleidoscope and Under Par, are really good, and I'm really looking forward to the third one of that.
They are. No, yeah, really good. And I had Andrea on the podcast a few episodes ago and read her book. Yeah. And I agree. It was awesome. I'm actually getting more into crime books now, having avoided them because, you know, I'm just a bit scared of them. But I'm getting a bit more into them.
Do you feel like a real grown-up now?
I do. Nearly. It will come one day, I'm sure. But, yeah, I think because I've been reading, you know, I've read you now, I've read... Andrea, I've read Carrie Hunter, so I feel like I'm getting more into the genre. Yeah. So.
Oh yeah, I've read like two of Carrie's now as well. I'll probably go and read her other ones as well.
Mm.
I really enjoyed A Quiet Death.
Yeah.
I just recently read that on holiday. So.
Mm. Yeah, she's really good. So, what's the best piece of writing advice you've ever been given? Would you say?
Well, you've actually already said it. You can't edit nothing. Oh. You can't edit a blank page. I think it was Jill McKnight said that to me. If it wasn't, then I apologise to who did say it. But if it was, then thanks, Jill, because yeah. That was really good advice.
It's true.
Yeah. And actually, Andrea also, she said to me once that our books will be perfect for someone in the moment that they are. And I'm still not sure I completely understand what she meant, but... But the meaning I took was haters are going to hate and you can't waste any time worrying about them.
Oh, right. Okay. You see...
Because you're perfectly perfect for other people, so...
Yeah, I get that. You see, because I think maybe you think when you send them out into the world that they're not that perfect or you're worried about them. So you're not you specifically, yeah. Writers as a whole.
Yeah.
But whenever someone comes to it, it's fresh to them. That's what I took from that, so...
Well, there we go. She's a philosopher.
She is. I should get her back on. The Philosophies of Andrea Bramall. That's a new podcast coming soon. And final question. If you could be the love child of any two writers, alive or dead, who would you choose and why?
See, I knew you were going to ask this, and I've been thinking about it for like a week, and I am stumped. I've like scanned my bookshelves, I've gone through my Kindle, but like every time I came up with someone, like Virginia Woolf was an obvious one, then I just like remembered how messed up she was, and like and I was like, who wants to be her kid? Like, and I swear every author I came up with, I was like, no, it messed up, no, no. And then I was like, well, yeah, I'm alright too, messed up. So yeah, I'm really sorry, but I couldn't come up with any.
Are you the first refusal that I've had for this question?
Well, yeah, I think I am.
Well, on that note,
I'm really sorry.
I was asked this question, actually. I did a podcast with Sheena from the Lesbian Review this morning, and she sprung this question on me right at the end of the podcast, and I was like, oh my God, I don't know.
They were.
So,
Who did you come up with? You answer it then.
I'll answer it. Afterwards I thought, is that the best people? But anyway, my first one that sprung to my head was Judy Blume. Because I love Judy Blume. I read her books when I was younger, and I've read her recent books, which were brilliant.
Has she got new books?
Recent. She brought one out about a year or so ago.
Okay, I'm on that.
You should read it. It's brilliant. So she's a fantastic storyteller. So and who wouldn't like Judy Blume as their mum? Brilliant.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
And I think I said the other one would be Alison Bechdel, who did the Fun Home and Dykes to Watch Out For. But I would also want Georgia Beers as my auntie and Armistead Maupin as my uncle. So I created a little family for myself.
You got a whole family tree going.
Yeah. And yeah, so that's for future episodes. People can have a whole family. So there you go. Anyway, Wendy, nicely got out of that question. Well done. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on. It's been terrific chatting with you. And if people want to know more about you, where can they find you?
Well, first of all, thank you very much as well for taking the time to do this. Nice. And you can find me on Facebook. It's Wendy Hudson Author. My website's wendyhudsonauthor.com, and I'm also on Twitter, and it's at @whudsonauthor.
Okay, cool. And everyone go out and buy Mind to Keep, because it's brilliant. Okay, so thank you very much again, and good luck with the book launch.
Thank you. Bye.
That's the end of this Lesbian Book Club. So this is me, Claire Lydon, signing off. If you fancy dipping into any of my books, my brand new novel, Twice in a Lifetime, or any of the others, the All I Want series, the London series, Nothing to Lose, or The Long Weekend, you can find out more at www.clairelydon.co.uk, or just look me up on Amazon, Kobo, iTunes, or any of the other digital outlets, including Bella Books. I'm also on Twitter at Claire Lydon, so come on down and follow me there. And if you've yet to try my books, sign up to my VIP readers group at my and you can bag yourself a free lesbian romance to see if you like my writing, which I hope you will. That is at www.clairelydon.co.uk. Thanks to Denise at My Lesbian Radio for hosting and producing this podcast. It's much appreciated. Tune in to the Lesbian Lounge with Denise for LGBT news, views, interviews and gossip, and also for their other podcast, Ragtime. Join me next time for more hot book club action when I'll be interviewing US author Annette Morrie. See you then.